Well, good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to another edition of Warrior Connection. Hey, it's Thanksgiving week and all that means and everything, so let's go back to another time and another place. Let's have a discussion about family and poetry and everything. And to do this better, I invited my own cousin. Bonnie, welcome to Warrior Connection.
Thank you, and hi, Doug.
Hey,
nice
I love
to talk to you again.
Hey, ladies and gentlemen, Bonnie, this is my cousin Bonnie Rocky Tennis, or however Bonnie Tennis. She lives up in northern Minnesota. She's an author and a writer. She's been a registered nurse. She's been a teacher. She taught English. She taught Russian. I mean, a whole bunch of different stuff. We've had a lot of fun growing up together and everything. And we thought we'd talk about a little bit different things today. Hey, Bonnie, I mean, Thanksgiving really makes a lot of, it's important to everybody, isn't it?
Yes, it is. It gives people a time to be thankful and think about their blessings in their lives and things like that. And I just got to read this poem to you for having me on your show, okay? It's
well,
just
you're
called
welcome.
Thanks.
We had to do something different. I mean, a long time ago, and again, this is Thanksgiving, I'd like to read this. You wrote a short story or a poem called A Thanksgiving Gift. And this is absolutely incredible because it kind of sums up what this all it is. And I'm going to read this, and as we go through, if you want to interject some stuff or we can talk about it afterwards. Sometimes I wondered how fancy Grandma found her friends. She had a strange mixture of individuals that she called a friend, and it didn't matter how rich or poor, how popular or unpopular, how old or young one was, or what one had done or not done. It seemed like she knew everyone and everyone knew her. Grandma respected everyone and was especially a champion of the less fortunate, the needy, the underdog. She always told me, Pumpkin, don't judge anyone. You never know who God has sent to help you. Thanksgiving gave Fancy Grandma another chance to be generous. Every Friday before the week of Thanksgiving, she met with other members of the community to put together baskets for people in the community who would not afford to buy the makings of a Thanksgiving dinner. The baskets included a large frozen turkey, fresh potatoes, canned corn, canned cranberry sauce, stuffing mix, homegrown squash that Grandma donated, and a can of pumpkin pie mix. Before they met, they knew exactly who would receive the gift, and when they were done, each of them delivered packages until they were gone. Fancy Grandma always saved one Thanksgiving basket that she delivered the next day, Saturday. This year, she invited me to go with her when she delivered to the Genwine family. Eva and Charles Genwine lived in a log cabin in the woods, and there was only a trail to get there. Fancy Grandma worried that there was snow making it difficult for us to get back to the main road. When we woke up early Saturday morning, we turned on the radio for a weather forecast, which determined how long we stayed and if we stayed overnight. The forecast was for a cold but sunny day, and we planned to spend the night with the Genwine family. At first, when Fancy Grandma invited me to go with her to visit Genwines, I hesitated. Everyone knew they were very poor. People laughed at their large family, saying they had too many children. They could not support them. Classmates did not want to be with them in school, and as the children became older, they moved away from home, often quitting school. Others laughed at the way they dressed and the way they smelled of wood smoke from the way they heated their house. I didn't want to go there, but I didn't want to hurt Grandma's feelings. Bridget Genwine was the youngest child in the family and the only one still living at home. She was in my class at school, but I did not know her because she always stayed by herself at school. She always looked lonely. This fall, I had not seen her at all, and I wondered what happened to her. I wondered if she would be at home today. The day was cold and windy, so we dressed in warm clothes. That was a light powdering the snow on the frozen ground and only a few dried up leaves on the trees that looked stripped against the sky, with the verdant attire gone. Only the evergreens showed sign of life. Occasionally we saw a deer wandering through the woods looking for something to eat. Our car was full of groceries and gifts for the Genwines. Fancy Grandma thawed the turkey the night before and it was ready for Eva Genwine's oven. She also made pumpkin pie and whipped cream topping to go with it. She packed the car full of groceries, milk, butter, apples, oranges, carrots, celery, squash, tomatoes, corn, anything else she thought they would need, including a fresh batch of homemade buns. She also brought gifts for all of them. Charles's gift was a red plaid flannel shirt. people would be pleased. I felt to reserve a new fall clothes tablecloth, and Bridget's gift was a new Scrabble game. It was a Thanksgiving Christmas party all in one weekend. As we drove closer to the cabin, we smelled the odor of wood smoke coming from the chimney. Grandma said we would be there soon. Charles Genwine answered the door. He was a kind-looking gentleman, small in stature, with graying hair and deep-set eyes. He greeted Grandma and me cheerfully and offered to help us carry in our food and gifts. Eva Genwine was a short, chunky, gray-haired, round-faced woman with a kind, gentle face and a big smile. Fancy Grandma and she were busy immediately preparing our Thanksgiving dinner. Bridget was shy and quiet, reserved. She acknowledged me as someone she knew from school. For a second, I felt ashamed. I had not defended her more and been her friend. She was tiny like her father and wore old-fashioned clothing, 10 years outdated. Their house had one large room that included the kitchen, the living room, and a bedroom off to the right. That was Charles and Eva's. A small stepladder led to the loft where Bridget slept. All the furniture was old and worn and a mixture of different styles. In the corner of the living room was a fire burning in a huge rock fireplace. The other side of the room was a old wood-burning range they would use to cook their food and heat their cabin. There was no indoor bathroom or running water. As the food cooked, the room filled with the smell roasting turkey and dressing. Eva took her new fall tablecloth that had pumpkins on it and put it on her table. Then she carefully set the table as she was serving as the President of the United States or the Queen of England. Everything was set in perfect order, even if none of her dishes or silverware matched. After we sat down for dinner, Charles asked us all to bow our heads. He asked the Lord's blessing on the food and everyone there. He thanked for the blessings we all received this past year, for friends, for health, and for our good time together. After he carved the turkey, we began to eat our dinner, prepared on an old wooden kitchen stove. Bridget remained quiet during dinner. It wasn't until the table was cleared, until the dishes were washed, she received a nod from her father. She climbed the ladder to the loft and returned with a beautiful, shiny violin and gave it to him. It was as if the whole cabin lit up. The excitement and the pleasure on Bridget and her father's face was obvious as he began to play perfectly Turkey in the Straw. Next, he began to play Orange Blossom Special, with his fingers flying over the strings, going faster and faster and faster. Bridget came and took my hands, and we began to promenade around the room, do-si-do, and swing around and around and around and around. When the song was over, we sat down exhausted, out of breath. The rest of the evening, we laughed and talked about how much fun that was and how we should get together more often to talk and to play. As it came closer to bedtime, Charles began to play the Vienna Waltz and the Blue Danube. It was the most magnificent violin performance I had ever heard in my life. Bridget and I slept well that night under a warm patchwork quilt and fell asleep listening to Fancy Grandma, Eva, and Charles discussing art, music, and current events. The loft was warm and cozy with all the warmth rising up there. We woke up to the sound of friendly conversations and laughter, and tantalizing order of bacon frying on the stove. After a breakfast of bacon and eggs, we left the Genwines for home. In our own goodbyes, Bridget and I vowed we would be good friends forever and keep in touch. I really enjoyed myself, Auntie Grandma. I know you did, Pumpkin. They're nice. I like them. I knew you would. This is the best Thanksgiving I ever had. That story, Bonnie, brings tears to the eyes.
I know, because we judge people too much, I think. And then when we get to know them, we realize how wrong we were. But this year, in January, I vowed I'm going to write the third book about Margaret, and that way people will find out more what happens to them as time goes on.
Yeah, tell us about the Margaret series. I mean, obviously I've got them and read them. You know, that's what cousins do. They read each other's books.
Yeah.
What is the Margaret series? I mean, and how did it come about? I mean, it's an incredible series of books.
Well, I remember living in the mid-50s, growing up in the mid-50s, I think the best time of history probably, for some of us anyway, And I just wanted to record some of these feelings and stories and the culture and the people and how it was at that time. And so I decided to make my main character, Margaret, and I built the character and then her two friends, and each of them has a loss, and that's what draws them together in this northern Scandinavian town. And I just think I have it. I have the people in the time well said. I mean, I think it's right on. And so I did their sixth grade, and Margaret's being raised by her grandma and her dad because her mother was killed in a car accident when she was 9, and that's her loss. And she's decided, this year I'm going to make friends, I'm going to have friends. And so I do their sixth grade, and then I take these characters into seventh grade, and then I did Margaret Inc., which means Margaret Incorporated, Margaret and the other two girls. And I thought I'd do a third one with them getting out of high school and going to college, and then finally get Margaret married to somebody. I don't know yet for sure, but I don't know if she's going to marry that tall, dark, handsome, genuine boy or Yanni yet. I haven't decided.
Well, this Margaret series books that you've written, a lot of your poetry, I mean, it's designed and written for children. I mean, we're looking from third grade on up to adults, and the whole Margaret series is designed around the 6th, 7th, and 8th graders.
Yeah, but I think people who grew up in the 50s would love them because it brings back so many good memories for them.
Yeah, it was a different time, wasn't it? I'm not sure. I mean, obviously, you know, we didn't have the computers and all that instant communication. Traveling took a long time to get there. I know whenever we left down here in Illinois to get up there back home up in northern Minnesota, it was a two-day drive. Today, when we didn't have interstates, you're on a two-lane road, and 55 miles an hour was the maximum speed you could go, if even that. So it was, I mean, transportation was a lot different. And then the other thing, too, is so many of the families that back at that time stayed relatively close to each other, didn't they?
Yes, and we went to school with our cousins, and we had picnics with our cousins, went to swimming lessons with our cousins, and that is before everybody was scattered all over the world. And we made our own fun. We played all kinds of games, like kick the can, or auntie I over. We would always have a ball and a bat and a glove. I mean, we could get a softball game going anywhere, you know.
And it didn't matter who was involved, all different ages, right?
Yes, even... I remember my uncle Henry on my mom's side, he would be in the games with us. So he was a kind of a child at heart and a kid, and I don't know. Those were the good old days.
You know, I think there was a time different because our parents, you know, your dad and my dad were brothers. So, I mean, you know, obviously they were close and they remained close. But at that time, you know, the families were still staying together. And then I guess probably in the 60s, when everybody started growing up and getting their own jobs and their own lives and their own families, everybody split to the four winds. So instead of growing up and remaining in a relatively same area, I know our family, we spread to the four winds all across the nation and the world.
That's right. And it's hard to keep in contact then, but I have found with Facebook and the computer, it's a lot easier. That's how we keep in contact, Doug.
Yeah, we try to do it. You just had another brand-new and incredible short story that just got published. And this one...
The one in her voice. The Brainerd Dispatch has a wonderful magazine that's published four times a year about women, for women, and by women. And I had the honor of writing an article, Human Interest Story, on our pastor there in Nisswa, Minnesota. And that was just in the fall Her Voice winter Her Voice magazine.
That's pretty neat.
So I've done a couple or so for them.
So you started out with one title. It's about the people. And then mm-hmm. the title got changed as they went to publication, A Life of Faith.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's what's involved in writing? I mean, you've written multiple books now. I mean, you know, you start out with your first one, I Am a Woman, I Am a Person, which was, I don't know, that's a long time ago.
Yeah, that's a true story. You know, well, so was this last human interest story. I mean, for the magazine, that's nonfiction.
Yeah. So anyhow, this one that you did, this is Life of Faith. And again, this is a brand new thing. It's just been published in what was the name of the magazine?
Her Voice.
Her Voice. Early every Sunday morning, if you are Pastor Carrie Jo Williamson's Facebook friend, you will see a Bible verse from the Psalms on your timeline. It's posted faithfully and regularly, and she sees it posted before she heads out to her lunch church. These faithful Facebook posts have especially joyous meaning, according to Pastor Carrie, during the holidays from Thanksgiving through Christmas and New Year's Day. Effervescent joys describes Pastor Carrie when she walks into a room, when she greets someone at the Lutheran Church of the Cross where she is associate pastor, and when you meet her on the street, in the hospital, or in the grocery store. Her hug, her smile, and her handshake are sincere, and you always feel at ease around her. Pastor Carrie becomes a communicator for good news and the Bible verse she posted on Facebook. This is the day the Lord has made. Let us rejoice and be glad in it. After the verse, she adds, see you in worship. Blessings. For Pastor Carrie, joy and blessings multiply during the Thanksgiving, Advent, and Christmas season. This began at her home in her childhood, forming traditions with her family, traditions that have followed her throughout her life. Thanksgiving is one holiday when we aren't worried about gifts and appearances. We sit around the table with family and friends and are just thankful. At Thanksgiving, we acknowledge that God has blessed us abundantly, and we are called to share out that abundance, she says. There are many times Thanksgiving weekend and the first Sunday in Advent run together, so even when the first Advent candle is lit and we begin our journey to the manger, we are still thinking about Thanksgiving and turkey. Lighting the candle and Advent wreath is more than a symbol of Pastor Carrie. It's her anticipation of God's greatest gift given to us personally and to the world. It's a time to focus on what the coming of God's love at Christmas means with its message of hope and promise and life. It's also when we call to share about the good news, even if calendars are full and stress is high, to create a perfect holiday. She says that Christmas is overdone at times, and it should not be about gifts, but about what is special during the holidays. It's a joy to walk with people during the Advent season and anticipate with them and catch their excitement of coming of the Christ child. Pastor Carrie says that the candlelight service on Christmas Eve is powerful. Standing in the front of the church and watching the people with lit candles and listening to them sing Silent Night in a holy moment. For a moment you visually see light shining in the darkness from the Gospel of John. You know what Christ is present, she says. She also loves to watch the excitement in the children during the children's sermon. They are full of stories about Jesus' birth and his joy to hear them in their faith. Christmas family traditions are important to Pastor Carrie. She remembers going with her dad and her sister every year shopping for their mother's Christmas gift. She also remembers decorating the tree with her sister using ornaments given to them over the years by friends and family. With each ornament, they remembered the one who gave it, giving thanks for the love given and the life shared. Tradition, of course, included going to church as a family to celebrate Christ's birth and then heading over to her aunt's or going home to be with family on Christmas Eve. Christmas morning was special for Pastor Carrie and her sister, and they always looked forward to it. It was a time when they would read the Christmas story from the Gospel of Luke, share gifts with each other, and have a wonderful brunch together as family. To this day, Pastor Carrie celebrates Christmas with her parents and younger sister who has three children. When speaking with Pastor Carrie, she expressed the time between Thanksgiving and the New Year is not always happy for everyone. That can be a time of great loneliness, sadness, stress, and difficulty. Last year, Lutheran Church of the Cross held a blue Christmas service. At this service, acknowledged that Christmas season is difficult sometimes, and that can bring a mixture of emotions to people. Sometimes easier is better, she says, referring to simplifying the holiday with even the possibility of having pizza for Christmas dinner. Pastor Carey was born in Findlay, Minnesota, and grew up in White Bear Lake, Shoreview. From the 9th to 12th grade, she attended and graduated from Minnehaha Academy. And after high school graduation, she went to Concordia College in Moorhead, Minnesota, where it was a great fit for her. She finished with a secondary education degree in social studies and minor in religion. Concordia College has a place where she made lifelong friends. It's a good school for someone who had thought of wanting to go into the ministry. After Concordia, Pastor Carey moved to Red Wing, Minnesota, and was hired as youth director at the United Lutheran Church. It was there that the pastors of the people of the church encouraged her to go to the seminary. I thought they were crazy at first, she says, but one thing led to another, and I began my studies at Lutheran Seminary in St. Paul to become a pastor. She graduated from seminary in May of 2003, and since then, Pastor Carey has served the congregations in Canada Falls, Minnesota, Tempe, Arizona, and Hope Lutheran in Surrey, North Dakota. She was also involved in Lutheran campus ministry at Minnesota State University before coming to Lutheran Church of the Cross in Nisswa, Minnesota. Church has always been an important part of my family, she says. We went to church every Sunday as a family, and when we came home, we talked about it. My sister and I attended Sunday school, and then we were old enough, we became involved in the youth group. Her parents were role models, were involved and served in the church. They taught Sunday school and Bible school, were on the church council, and lived their faith. During high school, Pastor Carey had a really good youth director who noticed she had leadership skills and talked to her about going into the ministry and becoming a youth director. Many people asked Pastor Carey about her time on the plains in western North Dakota. She says that those 5 years spent living on the prairie and the wide open spaces were wonderful. You can't beat those beautiful sunrise sunsets on the prairie, she says. I really appreciate them. The job in Nisswa opened, and it was a gift for her. It brought her closer to roots and her parents' cabin, where she spent most of her summer weekends in her youth. She can see God's hand in bringing her back to Minnesota and closer to friends and family. Most of all, it's a blessing to be one of the pastors of Lutheran Church of the Cross. According to Pastor Carey, Joe Williamson, there are many good things about being a pastor. However, the greatest thing is about being a pastor is to the people, she says. And this is brand new, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she's quite a wonderful person. And she really does have effervescence about her. She's just bubbly and kind and good. So it was really fun to write that story.
How does one go about writing? I mean, you've been writing books now and you've been writing poetry. We got some more of your poems here. How does one go about doing this? I mean, obviously you studied English and everything and branched out even into nursing. I mean, some people go, where's the connection? But, you know, for us, there's always a connection. But how and why did you get involved in writing? And your stories all have the same theme all the way through it, the family and love and hope and charity.
First of all, Doug, I just get so tired of all the negativity today, and I can hardly write negative things, so everything I write comes out. I want to help people have hope and feel better about the world and themselves, because without hope, we're nothing. And as far as writing, it's just always been in me. I was kind of on the farm way out in the country, and my siblings were older and younger, and I just observed a lot, and into my heart, I must have, not only my memory, but my heart. And to write, you just have to start writing and from the heart and from your feelings and what you see and what you know. That's the best place to start. I do not like research projects, but, you know, where you have to do a lot of documenting where you got things, but I like the creative part. And so I started writing my feelings down, and that can be corrected later as long as they're on paper. The main thing is just start putting your feelings down on paper. And sometimes people encourage their students or other people to just keep a journal. But I guess my journal was in my head, because I never kept a journal when I was young. But I sure can remember some of those things. And, you know, I'm glad, because I was the second to the youngest of our living siblings. The last boy, Neil, passed away right after he was born. So there were eight of us and our mom and dad, and now there's only four of us left. So I'm glad that I got some of that down, because life is short, you know. I think I sent you one of my newest poems about yesterday.
Yeah, why don't you, can you read that for us, please?
Oh, if I can, let's see, where is it? I did. Yesterday, so quietly, so gently, so softly, as a feather, you floated in the wind under a lemon-colored sun that embellished an ocean blue sky. Then it's as if a magician's hand and some abracadabra made you disappear far into the deepest night on the other side of the world. Yesterday, we can't touch you even when we try. Sometimes we can't remember you even. Your speedy exit on the fast track you rode baffled us, and years passed and passed and passed, giving us today, and us shaking our heads saying, all those years just flew by. They seem like yesterday.
Yeah, the memories I have yesterday when we were growing up and we'd come up to the farm and we'd get the opportunity there, and I know all our family picnics, whether we were on the farm or out at the old mill. I mean, it's just like I can go back and look at those pictures and I can almost smell the aromas and everything. I mean, your mom's cooking, you know, like wiping through the house or whatever we were doing, or if we were over, you know, and Aunt, you know, Uncle Milford's and Aunt Irene's, you know, on the next at the family farm where they grew up, or in town at Grandma's. I mean, it was just like, it's so long ago, but it seems like yesterday, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. And those women were good cooks.
That's an understatement.
Everything was made from scratch, and everything was good. I can just remember this stuffed turkey. And my mom would always have a homemade roasted goose stuffed with dressing. It had a different flavor than the turkey because it didn't have any white meat, but I can remember that. I don't like wild geese, but domestic. Tasted pretty good. I've often thought I should go buy one in the store and fix it, but I don't know if anybody would care that much for it, other than me, maybe. I don't know.
We always had a goose, or, well, obviously when I was growing up again, a tradition we had down here, not, you know, not when we were up there back home, but down here in Illinois, my cousins and I, we'd always get up and we'd go hunting early Thanksgiving morning or Christmas morning on that weekend. So we always had, you know, wild game. And I mean, that was the same thing at your family. There was always wild game there to be had. I mean, growing up in northern Minnesota, that was just a given. Everybody
especially
got
venison.
Them. Yes, yeah.
In those days.
I don't know if you remember one time I was up there in the middle of the summer. I think it was maybe 14 or 15. And I went wild goose hunting. And the story got around real fast. Yeah, Doug took his grandpa's gun and he went out hunting geese, and it's the middle of the summer.
You know Garrison Keillor? You know
yeah.
who he is? Lake Wobegon?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. He was in our town a couple weeks ago, and I got tickets for us. And he was talking about the deer shack going hunting and how nobody really liked venison, but they went deer hunting anyway. And it was just so funny. Of course, he really built up the Minnesota talk and language and the, you know what how he does things.
Mm-hmm.
And that was broadcast. It was broadcast on the National Public Radio, but it was really fun, and I was so glad I could get to see him because he's retiring, I guess. Well, anyway, he had a whole long monologue on deer hunting, which fit because it was deer hunting, first weekend of deer hunting. So
yeah, you know,
only, I suppose people today couldn't understand, you know, that, but it's too bad because I think if they could only just know one day what it was like then, I think that they'd understand where we're all coming from.
You know, I mean, obviously, you know, we got a farming background. Our grandfather, you know, well, yeah, our great-grandfather actually brought our grandfather up to northern Minnesota, I mean, at the time before nobody else was there, and they put out the homestead there, and I remember when it was in 1986 when we had the 100th anniversary of the family. But, you know, all of you guys, your dad and everybody else, and my dad was involved, I mean, had a farmer's background. And you wrote one of your poems here, a farmer's song. How did you get that? I mean, obviously you grew up on a farm, so you knew what it was like and everything.
Well, it just came to me. It was, and it is what it's like. I mean, it's good and bad there too. You know, it's good times and bad times and struggles, and but they value the land. The land is the black dirt is gold to them, and that's where that came from. Do you have it?
Yeah, I'm ready. Here it is, a farmer's song. I want to go back to the farm again and live in the wide open spaces when the wind blows through the trees over the black dirt in the spring, where hopeful farmers and wives fulfill of unquestioning dreams of bounteous crops and fair and good grain prices, working together, planting crops, relying on fate that straightens stooped shoulders and curved spines, the price paid for years of heavy loads and back-crushing work. I want to go back to the farm again where the black dirt in the farmer's eyes glows in the spring like gold. That no time at all turns to luscious green with determined growing crops from just the right rain, soft and plenty at the precise time, most important time, and good farmers and their loving wives smile filling the growth as if they were part of the stem, the leaf, the root, the plant itself. They smile a smile that penetrates their body and their spirit, their soul, warming them from the inside out like hot coffee, afternoon coffee, with the taste of bologna sandwich on fresh homemade bread, a p.m. lunch break, one cold, rainy day. I want to go back to the farm again where thankful farmers and their proud wives toil in the heat as they harvest the golden wheat, waving in the fall's harvest breeze that came from the black soil that was like gold, wheat that came from the luscious green plants so quickly. And the good farmers and loving wives smile from inside out because they know that another year has passed and another year will come, and they will survive and continue to farm. That dirt is just like gold.
That's cool, I think, even. I even think that's cool.
You know, it was so neat. Go ahead.
I think I nailed some of those feelings.
Yeah, I think you did, because it was so neat when we look across out there to the prairie and the wheat turn into pure gold and the sun shining and then whatever animal was running through the field or us running through the field.
I know. I just hated running through the field after it was combined and all those little shoots that were left would scratch your legs. I'd have more scratches on my legs from doing that. And, of course, it was always barefoot probably, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't do it today. I couldn't run on rocks and barefoot or on combine fields barefoot for anything, or even plowed fields. They were hard on the feet too.
Just a different time at a different place.
I think we had soles. I think our the bottom of our feet got as hard as leather and soles to do that. And then probably when you're young, you don't feel things so much either because of the excitement of everything.
Yeah, obviously, I mean, we just had our first snow here over the last few days here in Illinois. I don't know if you've got any snow, but everything was a brilliant white. And it just came in just enough dusting. I think maybe we had an inch or two, just enough to make everything white. And then once every wind started blowing and the sun came out on Sunday morning, it was just absolutely beautiful, just an entire sea of white as far as you could see.
I know. We did too, but some of it's going now. But I think we're going to get some more tonight. It looks like, and it feels like it, and the prediction is for more snow. So I hope it is. It doesn't mean bad roads for tomorrow for everybody, but the snow makes everything more beautiful, I think.
Oh, yeah, you wrote a poem, Snow for Christmas, didn't you?
Yeah, I did.
A white, you know, it just ties all together. I mean, it's so interesting. Snow for Christmas, a white Christmas we want, everyone said. The longing for snow increased by the minute, because what is Christmas if it snow isn't in it? Has November passed by with no snow in sight? The wish and the dream remain day and night. Leaves left from the fall raking, dry and brown on the ground. Trees naked and shivering stood all around, except for the evergreens that stood tall and proud, green as ever, and singing the ditty. We're ready for Christmas and winter and snow. We're ready to put on a theatrical show. December came as nothing happened, no snow, and a white Christmas was sung on the car radio. The earth outside remained bare and black, and as a dull as burlap, 100-pound sack, and children went to bed, longing to play in the snow, making snowmen the very next day, longing to make snow angels to sled, ski, and skate, longing for snowballs and snow forts to make, longing for red cheeks and seeing their breath in cold air. Nothing's more in fun anywhere. And then, just like magic and such, the snow came with almost too much. It covered the dead leaves and all the dead grass, decorated the evergreens and giving them class, covered the rooftops and fences and driveways and everything else, front ways and sideways. It'll be a white Christmas after all, they said with a smile. It's here to stay and stay for a while. Little kids and big kids and old kids were happy, and Grandma and Grandpa and Mama and Pappy. Hello, winter said, I'm here to stay for a while. Hunker down and stay happy, I want you to smile. There'll be diamonds around you sparkling with light. I just decorated the world for you day and night.
You know something? It's fun to hear someone read your poetry, your own poetry. You know that? It's fun hearing you read it.
Well, thank you. I mean, you wrote this. I mean, there's something in the blood. I'm sitting here, you know, and we started talking about doing this, and as each time I read this, memories are flying back.
I know. Yeah, and we're getting older, too, so we have to enjoy the rest of every day, I guess.
Yeah, we got our own grandkids now. It still seems like thing, and, you know, obviously when your brother, my cousin, was dying here a couple of weeks ago, as we were talking, it just didn't seem even possible because, I don't know, like you and I still think of us as the kids.
I do, too, but we aren't anymore.
Yeah, yes,
maybe it's the kid in us that wants to be, though, and I think that's important that we all always stay with and live with the kid in us.
That's where your writings and your books are going, aren't they? I mean, to stay the kid forever?
Yeah. Is it okay if I read a poem of yours?
Well sure.
Okay. I like this one, Ode to the Nurse by Doug Rocky. Mother, wife, daughter, and sister, the dove who sails above the clouds, soaring on golden wings with a heart of gold, busted bodies causing interrupted dreams, pain and suffering she strives to alleviate using knowledge, skills, and too many prayers. The nurse, the dedicated professional selected and wanted during war while the injured arrive, yet ignored and abandoned after the war's end. Only the very few continue their efforts to care for veterans after war's end, because memories and recognition of continued problems must be ignored. The nurse, the preserver of life, may she always sail on golden wings with God-given strength to care for those in need. the nurse, the preserver of life, the nurse, the professional who cares for eternity in spite of adversity and pain and their own suffering, showing courage that comes from the God-given heart of gold. Here's to the nurse. May she prosper and thrive. May she always be there to save the next life. I like that.
Yeah, thank you.
That's beautiful. And then I want to do, is that, do you pronounce his name Berrigan?
Pardon?
Phil Berrigan, Disciple of Peace?
Yeah, Phil Berrigan is an incredible, he was a Catholic priest, totally involved in peace and everything. I mean, from World War II and Vietnam and the Desert Storm and everything else. And then he left the priesthood, but him and his brother, they were two brothers, you know, they were Catholic priests. And after Phil left the priesthood, then he married a Catholic nun who also left the nunnery, I guess you would say, and they continued on in their work and peace and everything else. But he was a longtime friend, and I don't even know how I got involved and met him, and it's just like every once in a while you get this opportunity to walk in the footsteps of somebody or see somebody else that just, I don't know, does something for you. I don't know.
Yeah, and he lived from 1923 to 2002.
Mm-hmm.
And now that we just had Veterans Day, this is so appropriate, too. You know, we have all these holidays together. It's just amazing. But the name of this is Phil Berrigan, Disciple of Peace by Doug Rocky. The world has lost a valiant peacemaker, a man whose entire existence was dedicated to peace. From World War II through Gulf War I to today, he sought peaceful solutions to complex problems. While many only talk, Phil acted. He acted with conviction and willingness to suffer retaliation. He acted for all of the citizens of the world. Today we mourn his loss, but must rejoice in knowing that God has called his disciple of peace to his side. May we all learn from Phil's dedication. May we all learn that we must make the commitment to peace. May we all learn that peace begins with each of us. May we all walk in the footpath of the disciple of peace. May we all strive to complete Phil's earthly mission, for peace is the hope, dream, and goal of all. Let's make Phil's dream his legacy, the fulfillment of peace on earth. That's nice. He must have been a great man.
Absolutely incredible man. They're just, there's so many stories that we could tell and everything, but that's for another time and another place. You know, it's so strange because, I mean, both you and I were having stuff, and you get all your books that are written. And when our grandparents came from Norway, they didn't speak English, and I know our parents didn't speak English until, you know, they were older. But then the decision was made, and I think that's a time that none of us would continue to learn to speak Norwegian, because English was the language that you learn and went on to get educated. And I know our aunts, it was so strange because, you know, here they're coming down first generation, born in the United States up in the northern Minnesota, and which at that time was basically a wilderness, and they went on to get an incredible education. And then all of us, I mean, where we went to with our lives, all of our generation, you know, the cousins, it was just like, who would ever thunk? There's something.
You know, I really am thankful that they thought education was important. I really am, because it is. I think so, too. And I don't know, somebody put on Facebook one time or sent me an email, and I wish I could find it, the test that they had to take at those old country schools to graduate from 8th grade. It's incredible. I mean, and it's incredibly hard. I wonder, you know, if I could even pass it. But they really taught them there, and it was amazing to read. I wish I could find it again. If I do, I'll send it to you. And then it was, can you pass this? Do you think you can pass this? You know? So even if they just, some of those people just had eighth grade educations, they had a good education, you know?
Yeah, we didn't think about that because, when you know, when our dads were growing up, I mean, that was, they're getting out of high school right there in the middle of the Depression, end of the Depression,
mm-hmm.
and right before World War II started, and, you know, and then everybody got spread to the four winds. I mean, in our thing, my dad was the only one of the brothers that had to go to World War II.
Yeah.
Everybody else was involved in farming, but I know, well, I mean, that's how I came about.
Yeah, I know. And I bet he had a lot of tales to tell, too.
Yeah, I mean,
so
all
World War II, people had a lot of stories.
Yeah, I think it was just, it was a different time or anything, and I think we all long for that. Some of us have been able to, you know, maintain that. Like right now, I've got all my family here, which is wonderful, and my grandkids are all running around the house in the other room right now. It's my youngest son is taking care of all the grandkids. But it's important for everybody to get together and remember what it's all about, I think. And I mean, your writings have been digging into that stuff. Just totally, totally fascinating.
Well, I decided whether I get to be famous or not, I'm going to write these, and I did print some because I didn't want it to die in a computer if something happened to me. They'll always have these to look at, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I've gotten some honors, too. I've been in Poetry on the Wall. I was in Brainerd, and then our church has a celebration center that is just really nice. It was built after we moved there. And they wanted to honor the arts because a lot of public activities take place there. And they, last summer for 6 weeks, I had a poetry exhibit, just me, of 80 poems at least, all put up around that celebration center for the public to see. And I was really honored that they did that for me.
Well, how many poems do you have? You've written multiple books. Now, how many poems? Do you have any idea how many poems you've written?
Oh, I don't know. I suppose I must have, I had 80 there. I must have, you know, I just don't do all poetry, so I must have over 100. I just write when I'm in the mood, you know. Or if I'm sitting there, I know that Bob Dylan said he wrote Blown in the Wind in about 10 minutes. Sometimes it just comes to me and I just say, I got to write this down right now. And I do, and then I correct it later because sometimes you get extra words you don't want or things like that, you know.
You got another poem you can read for us?
Mm. Well,
pick
I want to read this for you. This is
what something.
I was going to read in the beginning, and this fits, and then I'll see what else I have here. I could do January Thaw later. It's called Thanks, and it's real short. This is for you, Doug, from me. And to God for all his blessings on us all these years. Thanks for the sun and the moon and stars, gentle breezes on a summer's night, soft snowflakes sparkling in moonlight. Thanks for green grass, trees, and perfumed flowers, for love and true friends that are ours. Thanks. Thanksgiving poem.
That's kind of neat. You've got another short book, and I mean, we only got about 5 minutes left. We haven't got time, but you called Grandma's Three Winks.
Yeah.
This, I mean, it's almost like it fits in with the Margaret series.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a different thing again. And
should I read Shelling Peas?
Yeah, why not?
This is so. And I have January Thaw too. These are some of my newer poems, but I just love this one because it's so true and how we appreciate simple things in those days, just a visit, you know. Shelling Peas, the house respite a cool kitchen sweating on that pressure cooking hot, humid August afternoon, wiping sweat from her brow with hair pulled back, exposing the white hair around her temples and facial wrinkles. It seemed as plowed fields in the fall. She sat in a white scuffed kitchen chair, its paint peeling especially on the rungs from the oh-so-many shoes of little ones. She sat, chair pushed out diagonally away from a kitchen table, covered by a red and white checkered oilcloth. Peas pinged as she shelled them into the white enamel dishpan held in her lap, and she wiped sweat from her forehead with the bottom of her green and white paisley apron as the afternoon passed, oh, so slowly, it seemed. And then she pulled her house dress up to get cooler air to her thighs and continued to shell peas while condensation formed on the outside of cream cans filled with cold well water. It dripped down their sides, leaving tracks on the way to the bottom, then onto the kitchen floor. We sat on the damp, cool linoleum floor that had some kind of swirling gray and white pattern with our own small kettle, a fitting size for a child. Our kettle had few peas, so we ate them, popping them fresh and juicy into our mouth. Then we giggled and decided, "We're canning your peas." She didn't mind and said nothing, enjoying our visit. When all the peas were shelled and we left for home, she said, "Please come back and we'll shell peas again."
Kind of nice. Yeah, we got a couple minutes left here. January thaw.
Are you reading it?
Yeah, let's see if I can find it here. I'm having fun reading your poetry, by the way.
Oh, thank you.
January thaw. Hey, there's something about a day at January's end when warm sun is shining brightly on the melting snow and water is drip, drip, dripping, leaving sparkling, glittering icicles all shapes and sizes hanging from the rooftops and green shingles. There's something pristine about walking in slushy snow and passing by your neighbor who is spending the day outdoors for the first time all winter, shoveling a walk, looking up and waving, smiling that the true blue cozy warmth from the inside smile right at you, and hollering with a hopeful, uplifting, and soothing tone, "Nice day, isn't it?" There's something about superbly gracious about the sun's warmth from stronger rays, penetrating layers and layers of clothing, a parka with a hood up, a stocking cap, a sweatshirt, a woolen shirt, right into your soul. Not bringing rose-colored glasses, but true hope and promise, something futuristic, something that says spring's around the corner, something that tells us cold, dark days are going to end soon, something that is a glimpse and a taste of sweet wine that keeps us going, 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 so we don't give up and finally push ourselves true to when the first crocus peeks through the hard, cold earth. Yes, there's something special about a January thaw, so throw down our hood down and take off our stocking cap that sticks our necks out further just to feel more sun and breathe the taste air that feels like spring. There's something about a January thaw that makes the world happy.
You know, I got to get this quickly done, but I was thinking of the story in Veterans Voices. I love this book about Christmas 1970, A Time Without Peace.
Mm-hmm.
Boy, that got my heart right. Oh, and I just can understand the conflict of celebrating Christmas and then going out and on bombing raids.
Yeah.
You know, I almost enlisted when I got done, when I moved back to Minnesota from California, and I owed so much I couldn't, money and student loans that I was so broke, I couldn't really get back. I almost enlisted then. They probably would have made me a teacher somewhere. But when, and then so I think of this, and then I think of you, and I think if Gilman hadn't come along, I don't know, maybe I'd have been there too. Who knows? But you talk about it's supposed to be a truce.
Mm-hmm.
This is from Christmas 1970, A Time Without Peace by Doug. Christmas Eve arrived with the sound of aircraft flying overhead and the candlelight church services in the base chapel. As I had during my childhood, I went to the service to sing songs of praise and joy in anticipation of Jesus' birth. And then you even talk about a helicopter dropping snowflakes on you. That is incredible. I left the chapel in what seemed as unusual prelude to a night when B-52s would rain bombs and death upon the enemy far below. Our mission was not unusual, except we were going into combat on Christmas Eve with the conclusion, death on Christmas Day. And then how you played Silent Night in the, was it the plane?
That? On the woolen sack tape recorder.
Yeah. And then you had to stop it to get instructions, and then you say, we were not dealing well with the significance of these contrasting events when suddenly the sky was bright as day and the voice of our Lord echoed in our minds, be at peace for today is Christmas, and you just did your job.
Yeah, I think
and then
that's,
you ended, huh?
I think that's something for everybody to understand that was in the military that's involved in it.
Yeah. And then you, we must set aside economic, political, and social agendas and strive for the peace and harmony that was a promise issued so long ago. And to quote one hymn, let there be peace on earth and let it begin with me. Merry Christmas. That is really a good story.
Yeah, thank you.
I don't think people understand what it's like.
I don't either.
I don't think they do.
You can't be, unless you were there, you don't know. And I think there was something unique because, and this is part of where this was going, because your ridings and everything goes back to when we were children.
Mm-hmm.
And then we've continued to ride and be involved in things to our, I don't know, where we're at now, senior citizens, I guess.
Yeah, we are.
But there was something... There's something about all of this that happened.
Yeah. And in through all of it, though, life isn't perfect, but we all have been blessed, both of us, our kids, our family. We all have been blessed, and we have to remember that now with tomorrow, Thanksgiving, and then going into the Christmas season, that despite everything... You know, I was just looking at the Diary of Anne Frank, and I directed that play twice, and it ends. Despite everything, I believe that people are really good at heart.
Yeah,
that's how Anne Frank ended her diary, you know.
Impacting everybody. Well, our show is over. Bonnie, thank you very much for joining us, and God bless everybody. Happy Thanksgiving, and we'll go into a new season for a new year, learning and teaching and sharing. Progressive Radio Network definitely moves forward. Different things. You never know what you're going to learn or see. Thank you, Bonnie, and God bless everybody. Good night.
Thank you. Bye.